even though there is apparent difference. And he then explains on page 66, towards the bottom of page 66, there's no difference even though there's apparent difference, and any apparent difference is really only due to the realization of the beholder. So this is explained at the bottom of page 66 about seven lines up. The underlying principle is this, that though Gokula, Vrindavan here, is as holy and free from dross, meaning basically the influence of matter, as Goloka, still it is manifested on the mundane plane by the influence of the chit potency, Yogamaya. Invisible and non-visible matters in the prakat and aprakat leelas, in the prakat and aprakat regions, there is no impurity, contamination, and imperfection inherent in the world of limitation. So there is no contamination, actually. Only there is some difference in the matter of realization in proportion to the self-realization of the seekers after the Absolute. In other words, one who has become realized fully will see that there is no difference between the places and between the pastimes. So that is one point, how there's no difference between the places, and there's ultimately no difference between the pastimes either in the different places. Then he goes on to address the subject of just the whole parakya rasa idea as opposed to swakya. The whole idea of the unmarried loving exchanges between Krishna and the gopis, be it in Gokula or in Goloka. So, the point is that even though the pastimes in Gokula exhibit certain features due to being in the material world, like being married, Krishna taking birth, and so on, but they have their basis in Goloka, because there's a very important principle involved. That principle is discussed beginning at the bottom of page 67. This is very important, and this is very interesting. Down towards the bottom of page 67, he says, Rupa Goswami has made certain statements, and in regard to them, Jiva Goswami, after mature deliberation, has established the transcendental paramorship, means the parakya rasa, Krishna in his unmarried loving relationships with the gopis. He has established it as vibrama vilas. This is a very important term. Something seemingly different from what it appears to be. For example, his birth and other things like the apparent being married of the gopis, which are all accomplished by Yogamaya. By an explanation, this is actually in Krishna Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami has expressed his profound implication. Joyous pastimes by the medium of seeming error. Vibrama Vilas. So this term, Vibrama Vilas, Brahma, means confusion, bewilderment, mistake, error. And Vibrama, Vi, is like a particle of emphasis. Very confused. And Vilas means pastimes. So Vibrama Vilas. Vilas means like ecstatic pastimes. Vibrama Vilas means joyous pastimes through the medium of seeming error. it appears something is wrong. Krishna is mixing with the gopis particularly, and this appears wrong. But this is Vibhrama Vilas, ecstatic pastimes on the basis of apparent error. So he goes on to explain, still, this is on page 68, still, since Sripad Jiva Goswami has established the identity of Goloka with Gokula, it must be admitted that there is transcendental reality underlying all the pastimes of Gokula. A husband is one who binds himself in wedlock with a girl, while a paramour, you understand this term paramour, means boyfriend, unmarried, while a paramour is one who, in order to win another's wife's love, by means of love, crosses the conventions of morality, by the impulse of the sentiment that regards her love as the be-all and end-all of existence. Can you follow that? The idea is that regarding the other person's wife's love as being such an incomparable thing which must be obtained and attained, so the paramour crosses the conventions of morality to achieve that. In Goloka, there is no such function at all as that of the nuptial relationship, married relationship. Hence, there is no husbandhood characterized by such connection. On the other hand, since the gopis, who are self-supported real entities, are not tied to anybody else in wedlock, they cannot also have the state of concubinage, or becoming, you know, like a woman who gets into an illicit relationship with a boyfriend. There can also be no separate entities in the form of swakya and parakya states. In the visible pastimes on the mundane plane, the function in the form of the fact that the gopis are, some of them are apparently married, is found. But Krishna is beyond the scope of that function. Hence the said function of the circle of all love is contrived by Yoga Maya. This is Yoga Maya's expert arrangement. Do you remember some days ago we mentioned a little bit how Yoga Maya is most incredible what she does, most amazing what she does? So this is the most amazing part of what she does. Create this environment of apparent marriage in order to increase the ecstasy. Krishna tastes the transcendental rasa akin to paramourship by overstepping that function, by overlooking the marriage of the gopis. This pastime of going beyond the pale of the apparent moral function manifested by Yoga Maya is, however, also observable only on the mundane plane, by the eye that is enwrapped by the mundane covering. But there is really no such levity, or there's no such problem in the pastimes of Krishna. So those people who are in illusion, when they see Krishna's conjugal pastimes in Gokula, they'll think, just see, there he is mixing with married women. But the realized souls will not see that. They'll not see that exactly. So then he continues on page 69 to conclude this discussion, or at least our sort of brief analysis of it. About halfway down page 69, by the sentiments of ownership, there cannot be the extreme inaccessibility of the rasa. So the gopis have naturally, from eternity, the innate sentiment of being others' wedded wives. This is in Goloka. They think they have husbands, but there are no husbands. But by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, in order to add excitement to the whole thing, by helping to create the extreme inaccessibility of the rasa, Yoga Maya has arranged that all these gopis have this innate sentiment of being others' wedded wives. Krishna, too, in response to that sentiment, by assuming the reciprocal sentiment of paramorship, performs the rasa and the other amorous pastimes with the aid of the flute. Again, the flute is there. His favorite, Shir Ami, his dear friend. Goloka is the transcendental seat of eternally self-realized rasa beyond limited conception. Hence in Goloka, there is realization of the sentimental assumption of the rasa of paramorship. They just think like that, sentimentally. Or they just think like that. And in this way, the rasa reaches extreme heights, which otherwise would not be possibility if the sentiment of ownership was there. Some of you may be married, and you may know that before you're married, it seems a lot more exciting, but after you got married, it seems less exciting. Because the sentiment of ownership is there. The husband has to serve the family. The wife has to serve. It's not a matter of whether they want to or not. But when that is not there, and it's simply on the basis of whether they actually want to or not, then it's much more fun. So that is the idea here. This idea in paramorship. There is no paramorship. But it just looks like there is. In the material world, it looks like there is because there are husbands. In the spiritual world, it looks like there is because they think there are husbands. But in both cases, there are not really husbands, except for that third group. But then as they become perfect, then the husbands, the whole relationship, everything kind of falls away. So we'll continue discussing this tomorrow a bit further. Any comments or questions? Okay. Oh, the second case. No, there may be husbands. There may be. But there's no relationship. It's just an illusion. Okay. You were mentioning in regard to these 64 expertises, how Radharani has them. It's not just that she can dance nicely or sing nicely or talk cleverly or cook nicely, but she can do these things in the most fantastic ways we can't imagine at all. We can't begin to imagine. And one specific feature or manifestation of that is that when she cooks for Krishna, she never cooks the same thing twice. And she's been cooking for Krishna every day since there was no beginning, actually. Not just, you know, so many years or millions or billions of years. There's been no beginning, but she's never cooked the same thing twice. So just imagine that. We can't imagine that. But that just gives an idea of her expertise in all these things. You can apply the same principle to all these things. The way she can talk with Krishna. You know, her ability to talk in captivating ways. Her ability to dress herself in captivating ways. And to do all these 64 things in captivating ways is actually unlimited. And as a result, Krishna, who is definitely unlimited. He is kept in a state of constant enthrallment, just totally, totally overwhelmed by these things always. Because they are the complete manifestation of the pleasure potency, which is also unlimited. So there is unlimited capacity within the pleasure potency to please Krishna. And Srimati Radharani, being the pleasure potency in person, she has these unlimited capabilities to please Krishna in all these different ways. And Krishna himself has the same expertises. And he can also fascinate Radharani. So the exchanges that go on, this is called rasa. And this is the topmost rasa. All the gopis. Sorry? Oh, I see. Well, from what I've heard, I mean, I don't know where the story comes from, actually, specifically. It's not in the Krishna book, but it's a popular story that Krishna married all the gopis at that time. Although Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says some of the gopis are never married. But basically, yeah, he married all the gopis, and that way their desire to have him as their husband was fulfilled. But then later, all the different cowherd boys came back, and so then, at least with those who were actually married, then, you know, this concept of paramourship comes up. Because then when Krishna was no longer the husband, then the husbands were no longer very, you know, it was very exciting when they were married to Krishna. But when they were just married to the ordinary, I mean, at least in case of some of them like Abhimanyu, or there's the one called Govardhan Mala, who's married to Chandravali, then they didn't find it so exciting. Just like the cows, the calves, or the cows, when, because Krishna became the calves, but when the real calves were returned, then the cows were no longer so interested in their calves. And they would only go with Krishna. So when the cow, I mean, according to that story, when the different cowherd boys and cowherd personalities were returned after that pastime and became the husbands of the various gopis, because in so many cases they weren't such stimulating people, then the gopis sort of lost their interest in their husbands. But because they were attracted to Krishna and they'd associated with Krishna as their husbands, so their attraction for Krishna remained, and that manifested in the form then of these conjugal pastimes with Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vadeva Sudevaya. That thing which in verses 32 to 35 we understood to be the key to understanding Krishna consciousness and being able to accept Krishna consciousness. So that same thing, Vedeshu Dulabham Adulabham Atma Bhakto, so that very same thing, pure bhakti, is the key to the topmost platform of spiritual consciousness. Particularly we were looking at verse 37, and there was the discussion about the manifestations of the pleasure potency, 64 expertises which Srimati Radharani has. And she has them in their totality, and in that, in those ways, she is able to please Krishna, which is what the pleasure potency is all about, pleasing Krishna. In other words, it's not that she just sits there, you know, emanating some energy as the Hladini Shakti, but she does things. Yeah, those 64 things, she does them. And when she does them, gives Krishna pleasure. So they are the practical manifestations of the pleasure potency. And one point that I didn't actually mention yesterday, although it is referred to in the verse, is about her gopi friends and associates, who, verse 37 says, they are embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form. So, particularly the 8 main sakis and other of the closest gopis, they are, they're persons, they're individuals, but they are parts of Radharani's person. Radharani expands herself in different ways. She expands herself as the Lakshmis and the queens in Dwaraka, but she expands herself also in terms of different of her qualities become specifically embodied in certain particular individuals. And just as some examples, Tungavidya, who of course is one of the 8 main sakis, she embodies 18 of the 64 expertises, which are the manifestations of the Hladini Shakti, particularly dancing, drama, and all those which are to do with art. Tungavidya has them. Tungavidya. She embodies 18 of the 64. Dancing, drama, and all things to do with art, like painting and so on. Then there is Induleka. She is expert in all the things which are to do with the occult sciences, like mantras, palmistry, and there were various other types of things which are to do with, you know, like, anyway, occultish, magical type activities. Plus, she's an expert with flowers. So anything to do with flowers, making garlands, making crowns, making decorations on the ground with flowers, making beds out of flowers. So Induleka has those expertises. Then there's Rangadevi. She is expert in all the different activities which are to do with animals. Plus everything to do with cosmetics. Yes. She is a big cosmetics expert. And then various of the other 8 sakis, they have also their own particular expertises. But those are some examples of how her confidants, as mentioned in verse 37, her confidants are embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, or of her, actually. So then there was the discussion about the prakat and aprakat pastimes, how Gokula, which is the place of the prakat lila,
and Goloka, which is the main place of the Aprakat Leela, they are not different. So, even though there are apparent differences in the pastimes in the two places, when you understand them more in depth, then you see that there aren't really differences. That the apparent differences are superficial, plus the apparent differences, the basis, of course, is Goloka. The basis is the Aprakat Leela. And the Prakat Leela, what Krishna does when he was here, like when he was here 5,000 years ago, that is a manifestation of the Aprakat Leela. So that the original, in other words, is the Aprakat. So the differences in the Prakat Leela, like how the gopis, some of the gopis, or most of them, have husbands, how Krishna actually takes birth, how there are demons. So when you understand a little more deeply, then you see that even though there are these apparent differences, but they're not real. They're not real. It's not that they actually make a difference. They're just apparent, superficial. And they have their roots in the Aprakat Leela. They have their roots in Goloka Vrindavan. In Goloka Vrindavan, the gopis think they have husbands. And we mentioned, I think, in one of the earlier classes, how every now and then, some unknown person, when the gopis are trying to meet with Krishna, suddenly some unknown person appears on the scene and says, "Watch out! Your husbands are coming." And tells, you know, different of the individual gopis that, you know, Abhimanyu is coming, or Govardhan Mala is coming, or this one or that one. And immediately the gopis panic, thinking that their husbands are coming, but there are no husbands. They don't even exist. It's just the sentimental assumption, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said. And just like Krishna takes birth here in Gokula or in Mathura, and in Goloka, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they think he took birth from them, but he never did. And actually the fact is that even here in Gokula, Krishna didn't really take birth as such. First he entered the mind of Nanda Maharaj, then he transferred himself to the mind of Mother Yashoda, then he transferred himself to the womb of Mother Yashoda, and after a little while, he just stepped out, fully dressed, fully decorated with ornaments, and in a complete adult form, fully grown, with forearms, able to talk, and so on and so forth. So, even though it may, in certain respects, appear he took birth, he didn't really take birth. So it's superficial, and it can be overlooked, really. So in that sense, we understand that Prakat and Aprakat Leela, they're also the same. Then there was the discussion about Parakya and Swakya. How, in order to increase the excitement, then in Goloka there are meant to be husbands, even though they don't exist. And Krishna increases his enjoyment by apparently overstepping the moral conventions. Although there are no husbands, they don't exist. So what moral convention is he overstepping? And on top of that, as verse 37 says, that they are like Radharani is his pleasure potency. She is part of him. She is not a separate individual, as we are separate from each other. She is part of Krishna directly. So in enjoying with Radharani and the gopis who are her expansions, and even those who are not her expansions, but they are jivas, they are tatastha shakti, they are Krishna's tatastha shakti, So he's simply enjoying his own potencies. That's all. So I think it's in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada raises the question that many people think that Krishna was an adulterer when he performed the rasa dance and so on here in Gokula. Certainly all the so-called husbands thought Krishna was an adulterer. But the question is raised,